everyone, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to our podcast today. I have a very special guest with us. His name is Gary Giles. He is the CEO of Innovations Nutrition and Wellness, and he is based out of Dallas, Texas. So thank you for joining us today, Gary.
Angela, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Great. So as you know, this podcast is all about how all of us focus and how we all refocus. And so I want to talk to you more about that, but if you wouldn't mind, if you could just let our listeners know what you do, because we have many different guests that are coming from various industries. So some people may or may not be familiar with the type of industry that you work in. So if you wouldn't mind taking a moment to explain that briefly, that would be great.
Sure, Angela. INW is the country's largest contract manufacturing organization that serves nutrition and wellness companies. Typically, branded companies will come to us looking for expertise in developing formula, manufacturing product, innovations in packaging, sourcing, efficacy, clinical research, anything that has to do with success in the categories of human nutrition or wellness. That typically involves things that everybody sees on the store shelves, like protein powders, nutritional bars, oils, lotions, skin creams, those types of products.
Great. And one thing I was going to ask you is, for someone that does not know about your industry or your company, what is the time frame if a brand owner comes to your company and wants you to help them with a product? Is it 3 months? Is it 6 months? Is it a year? What is that timeline to educate some of our listeners that may not know this?
You know, it really depends on what we're talking about. If we're talking about a new color or a bottle on a very simple product like vitamin D, we're talking a couple of weeks. If we're talking about something that's truly innovative, like new approaches in probiotics or ancillary categories, you know, you could be talking years, depending on the R&D that's required.
Got it. And I assume that you're always open to talking, you know, with new brand owners to see if there's possibilities. And if so, we will put something on our website to reach out to you on that.
You know, I mean, that's the name Innovations, right? I mean, we really seek to be the thought leader in human nutrition or in wellness. So it's not uncommon for the proverbial mad scientist to come to us with an idea. We are our own scientists that are pretty good at vetting those things and deciding, you know, is this truly something that is a worthy project, not just for our associates internally, but is this the best use of time and resources?
So it's kind of interesting because I know you for, you know, and I know your background, but for anyone that has not seen your bio, you have worked for some amazing companies, and I'll break it down and you can kind of add on to it, but you've worked for a private equity company. You have worked as a CEO for other dietary supplement companies out there. And you want to highlight any of your experience out there? Because the reason I say that is that many listeners, this is not your first time, basically. You have spent many, many years in this industry. And so I don't know that I could even speak to the level of highlighting your background.
Well, you know, Angela, I might take a contrarian point of view on the importance of the industry. I guess, quite frankly, I feel like when you line up the criteria that are important, to the extent I've enjoyed any success in my career, I think deep industry nutrition and wellness experience is near the bottom of what's really important. I really go back to things that I learned very early in my career about leadership, about dedication, about the importance of having a servant's mentality. So those are the things that have really been helpful to me. I think that good leaders are able to pivot quickly and learn new industries. So I don't want to say it's not important, but really, when I think about the things that I'm really glad that happened to me, I don't know that having 20 years in the nutrition industry is most important. It's really a number of other things.
Well, you mentioned a servant mentality, and I love that theory, and I love that statement. Would you mind explaining what that means to you?
You know, Angela, I started my career as a U.S. Marine, and the Marine Corps is pretty good at teaching you two things. Accomplish the mission and take care of your people. So that has been sort of my true north since I finished college in 1990. And today, you know, I have an office here near one of the plants in Dallas, and the heat is out. And by the way, it's 30 degrees outside.
So. I was going to say, I'm in the Midwest today, so it's very cold here as well. Just to let our listeners know, the reason I do know Gary so well is because our search firm did place him in his role that he's at today. And I have been a fan of Gary's for quite some time. And when you talk about a servant leadership style, I found that in you immediately. And the way that I explain your style to many people, and I'm not sure if you've heard this or not from other candidates, but I always say that if there are four plants and one of them, you know, there's a crisis going on in it or something, if one of your employees comes in and you know it's important and they really need to talk to you at that moment, that basically you would look them in the eye and make them feel and truly do this as if there's nothing else going on. And I have found that to be such a unique and wonderful quality in a leader like yourself that I don't see a lot. It's very rare. And so do you credit that just to your upbringing or to the military? Where do you think you found that side?
Well, you flatter me and I don't deserve it, but thank you. You know, the first thing you do, like I mentioned, the heat being out, I before I started my day, I went over to the plant and I wanted to personally make sure that everyone was okay. Now, I knew they were. Of course, people were telling me they were, but there's no substitute for people seeing you lead from the front. One of my personal heroes is the former Secretary of Defense, James Mattis. And James Mattis was a four-star general. But one of the things he was known to do, despite the fact that he could have a very comfortable bed and a very safe and warm building every night, is he would go out and crawl into a dirt hole with his young enlisted 18-year-old Marines and spend the night there. That's what I think about. I mean, I think everybody develops some degree of leadership DNA in their upbringing. I mean, in my case, I had a very, I had two parents who, you know, gave me the proverbial white picket fence and sweet dog at home. But neither of them had any money growing up. I remember my grandparents did not have indoor plumbing. And I think, you know, at an early age, I learned the value of hard work and a dollar and responsibilities. So when I did get into the Marine Corps, they had some material to work with, at least in terms of not having to teach me everything over. But it's, you know, you asked me, where do I think I developed this? It started with having parents that taught me four things. Worship God. Love your family, salute the flag, and be kind to your neighbor. And if I could do those four things, you know, I'd be doing something right. So.
I love that. I love that. That's one of the most exciting things about this podcast is that we get to hear different views from different individuals on how they were brought up and what they've learned in life. And, you know, you as a CEO now and before, you know, you can have some of the best leaders that work for you, but they can be stressed out. They can, you know, have bad days, or maybe they're not, you know, projecting the image that you would like for them to do to with their team. And so give us just kind of a couple of ideas. For instance, if let's say that another CEO is listening out there and they've got a couple of leaders that, you know, really are not leading their team to where they should be and where they want them to be. Is, you know, what is something that they can do or that you do to kind of get your team back on track?
It's hard to do that and expect an immediate result. It's kind of like taking a nutritional product, right? You're not going to take a nutritional product and see a result the next day. You're going to see that result after some period of time and developing a habit. So the time to do that, develop that habit is early, so that when you are in the crunch, you've got good material to work with. In our case, we put our team together and insisted on a couple things. And for me, the playbook for this is one of my favorite business authors, a guy named Patrick Lencioni, who wrote a book called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, which I think is essential reading for any CEO or any business leader. And the premise of the book, and I'll paraphrase it, is that teams have to start with a commitment to each other. So in our case, with four subsidiary companies, I'm bringing leadership teams together that used to have a very strong commitment to all of their subordinates, but really didn't know much about the team that I'm asking them to join. And not only am I asking them to join, I'm asking them to put that first. So it's a shift. It's not going to happen overnight, but it starts with how do you develop trust? And you develop trust by being vulnerable with each other. And you need to create the environment for people to express ideas, to brainstorm, to speak freely, and not be thought of as some kind of village idiot or imbecile for speaking their mind. The process of making a decision with a group is a little bit like making sausage. I mean, the process isn't pretty, but at the end of the process, you usually emerge with a stronger work product if you have more people involved. Those people need to be comfortable working together, and they're only going to do that if they have trust amongst each other. If they have trust, they'll be candid. And the reason they'll be candid is they're not worried about sort of their safety, so to speak. You know, Johnny, I'm not saying this because I want you to lose your job. I don't. But, you know, we need to understand why you were down 20% last month. And it puts everyone in the position of being able to discuss the facts. And when you discuss the facts, you can produce results. So it's not some touchy-feely journey on making everyone feel better. It is a scripted journey on developing trust and using trust to promote candor and using candor to produce results. So
that's amazing what you just said, because I'll tell you why. We had a candidate, and when I asked this person, we were looking at this person for a very senior role, and I asked them, I said, you know, what is your management style? How do you lead people? And I'll never forget it. This woman said, just very quietly and very direct, she said, it starts from the top. And I thought, wow, that's so true. And the reason I can say that about you is because one of the things that I found to be so impressive when you were going through the change of making, you know, the decision of leaving your company to go to this certain company is that you were fighting for your team before you even had a team. and before you knew who your leadership team was going to be. And I, speaking from, you know, the search industry, I would recommend that to any CEO out there, because that was probably, that's one of the most impressive things I think I've ever seen. And it's very rare. And I'm not even sure if I've shared that with you. So, but it's you, I don't know if you even realized you were doing that, but you did. You were fighting for your team before you even knew who they were.
Thank you, Angela.
Moving forward, one thing I did want to ask you is, you know, we're all human, right? So at the end of the day, we all have, you know, arguments, or let's say strong discussions with our spouse or with our parents or with our children, our neighbors, or maybe it's a coworker. And, you know, let's say it's just one of those days, because we all go through it. But let's say it's one of those days you have to, present in front of a board or investors or, to a large group. You know, we're all shaken a little bit by that. And, you know, how do you personally, whether it's been now or in the past, how do you pull it together and perform and be at your very best? Because you've got to be on, and it's game on at that time. And so this is what this podcast is about. So how do you do that?
No, I guess there are a few parts to that, Angela. I don't wear my religion or my faith on my sleeve. But when I feel like I'm up against it or have a big challenge in front of me, I pray. Try and find a quiet place and, God sent Abraham out into the desert and didn't tell him where it was going, and it turned out all right. Put Noah on that ark and floated around for so many days, and things turned out fine. I think one of the things that has helped me sort of in a more professional context is I have, I'll call it a personal board of advisors externally to the company. And it's, you know, nothing that I assembled formally. They just kind of, it kind of happens this way. People you find whose advice you respect. In my case, I have a young analyst in the company. I hired him from a major investment bank. He's a star performer, and he's somebody who I have found is a very effective tool for me internally when people just may not be comfortable coming to talk to me about something, but they might be comfortable talking to him. So I, oftentimes when I'm looking for how something is going to play internally, we'll start there. But I'll call people I know. One of my board members in particular, he and I have an agreement that some of our conversations are quote off the record. And I call him and I'm comfortable being vulnerable. And you know, it's okay to say, I don't know what to do. It's a hard thing for leaders to say, I don't know what to do.
Right.
But when you step in front of everybody, you know, you can't say that. So you need to have a safe space to these things through, right, and have people who care about you and have not just your best interest, but we're willing to be objective with you.
A lot of companies, as you know, will use coaches at different times. One of the individuals that we had on this podcast recently was a coach for executive assistants. And so at all levels, sometimes we need that person, whether it be, you know, a mentor, a friend, someone to reach out to, because the last thing that you want your team to do, or someone even that's in the industry that might be listening to this, is to keep that inside and then blow up and take it out on their team. And because nothing good ever comes from that. And so, in my opinion, anyway, that's great. One of the other things, you know, turning that question a little bit on the other side is, you know, if you have someone that's worked for you in the past or is, you know, may work for you in the future, and let's just say that they're not focused at work and they're not happy at work, if you were giving advice to, you know, someone that managed that person, you know, I always say, you know, in our search firm, I always say, you know, if you're not happy, there's usually a reason, and to find that and to really, you know, figure out what that is, because it may have nothing to do with your job. It may have something to do, you know, inside or interpersonally. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think life is entirely too short to spend it in a job that you don't enjoy. We all have mm-hmm. bad days, and sometimes days turn into weeks or even months, especially, you know, if you are in a position of leadership. I've mm-hmm. had those stretches. But if it stretches beyond that, you need to look in the mirror and ask yourself if you're in the right position. Is there somebody right. coming to you who, you know, or somebody that's on your team who might be unhappy? I had a conversation with a guy this morning that I'm just sensing things aren't right. Now, you know, he's one of these guys who isn't comfortable being vulnerable yet, but something's up, and I know that because I know this person, and I know his family, and I know his life. So, you know, I try to keep the ability for my antenna to function by knowing people. You can't know everybody. I mean, we have almost 1,500 people in this company, and there's only a limited number of whom I know intimately. But I certainly know mm-hmm. my direct reports and their direct reports in terms of their life story. So I think it's important for me to know that. When I sense one of them is either unhappy or maybe even just take it a step further, not in the right role, mm-hmm. there's no shame in finding a way to move on. If it's somebody senior, not Absolutely. A case mm-hmm. of, hey, you're out tomorrow. Let's find a time for you to find the role that's right for you.
And you can email your resume at, I'm just joking, go ahead.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, of course. No, I get it. I know, I get it. And I think that that's one of the most important things. And I even share that with my staff as well. I always say, listen, you know, I value each and every one of you, but if you don't want to be here, let's find you a job you really want to be at, because you'll do so much better there. And if your whole heart's not in it, this probably isn't the right role for you, you know, and that's okay. And it's okay to admit that. And that's why, you know, a lot of people will call, you know, myself in the search industry. And I always find that there's several reasons that people will, you know, want to leave a job and make a big change. And it's usually because they don't feel respected. They don't feel, you know, in some way acknowledged or rewarded for their, you know, some of the successes that they have been a part of, and also to have a seat at the table. And that's usually more of the senior leadership, but value, people really at all levels crave the appreciation.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's interesting. I've got a young engineer that works for us at our Dallas plant. And I love talking to him because he's just full of ideas. He's saved us hundreds of thousands of dollars with ideas that might be very trivial, but you add them up. And, you know, I try to nurture that. So he's emailing me all the time with new ideas. And, you know, I make sure that his manager and appropriate people in our the chain of command, but our relationship are involved. But, you know, it's not a hierarchical structure in terms of letting people know they make impact. I mean, this is an entry level engineer who has passion and energy, and you know, I try to show them that that I appreciate that.
Yeah, a lot of people really we all should do a little bit more of that. The other thing that some of our guests have asked us that they've been interested in wanting to know from other guests is, you know, at some point in life, we've all experienced some type of failure or disappointment. And in your lifetime and in your career, you know, have you failed at something? And if so, you know, what did it take for you to overcome and refocus that and get yourself back? Because a lot of people, don't want to admit failure, but it happens. And I always say we learn from that. But what about you? Have you gone through anything like that before?
Gosh, so many times. And there's a YouTube video I would encourage everyone to watch. This may sound strange, but it was Conan O'Brien delivering the commencement address at Dartmouth College, my alma mater. And also on the dais with him were, at the time, former President George H.W. Bush. And you think he's going to get up and give this funny talk on, you know, like a comedian would do. But he says, the thing that I wish for you most is failures in life. And he said, it's from these moments where your development will come the most. And the way you respond to them is going to define you, not the fact that you have them or don't have them. I always ask this question, you know, to some extent when I'm interviewing people, you know, tell me about a failure. And, you know, if I get somebody who's not willing to tell me about it, or tries to, you know, polish it up with, you know, gee, I try too hard, or, you know, some attitude like that, I don't usually proceed. Because I think failure is an incredibly instructive tool. And, you know, a little story on Lee Iacocca, right, who in the 60s launched this dreadful failure of an automobile. Can't remember if it was the Edsel or not, but it was a failure, and it cost Ford Motor Company hundreds of millions of dollars, and he thought, I'm going to get fired. And Bill Ford Sr. at the time was the CEO, and Iacocca went to see him and was on his way thinking, okay, I'm going to go get fired. I'm on my way to get fired. And when he sees Ford, Ford is telling him about his next assignment. And he said, you mean I'm not getting fired? He said, I just spent $200 million on your education. Why in the world would I fire you now? And so, you know, in my life, you know, there are many. I guess the one that comes to mind most was the only time I, you know, had a mutual separation from a job. Call it getting fired, resigning. I mean, it was civil, but it was just not the right fit. First time in my life that had ever happened to me, and I was humiliated personally and emotionally, and I thought, what in the world? You know, I am a Marine. I don't fail. But it was incredibly powerful for me to go through that and to learn from it. And, you know, you learn a lot of things that help you going forward. So, you know, in my case, it was aligning myself with quality players in our industry. Make sure you do some homework on practices that companies, in our case, in the nutrition industry, used to make product. Right. Who are the types of people that you want to work with? At the end of the day, I think it all comes down to that. I started my business career after business school at a U.S. retailer called Office Depot. And the founder of Office Depot is a very charismatic guy named Dave Fuente, who is a mentor to this day. And Dave used to say the following thing. He would say, when times are good, people buy from their friends. But when times are bad, they still buy from their friends, make friends. And I think that's very instructive when you think about who you want to be spending, you know, in some cases, years of your life with. If you're chasing a dollar or a title or something other than the human beings around you, I think you're chasing the wrong thing. So, you know, for me, that failure in my career, when I had been chasing the wrong thing, it was very instructive.
I love that. Actually, you know, it's interesting because, as I always say, when you lose a position, you lose your identity, and or you feel like you've lost your identity because you're no longer at, you know, this title at that company. And we put a lot of weight on that. Just as human beings, that's what we do. And so, but I always say it's your open door to an opportunity that you might not have ever seen before.
It is.
And the other thing I wanted to mention is, it's interesting. Gary, for anyone out there, Gary knows my husband, and, I can't remember exactly who it was, but, if you are ever called to speak at a graduation, just like the individual that you mentioned before, I can't remember who it was for him, but to this day, every single high school graduate that we give a gift to, he will go and print that speech off and put that in their into their card with money, usually, but with that. And he always hopes that they read it. And he realizes that some may not, but he also realizes that some may. And it's interesting that that person, what they said meant a lot to him, as well as what, when you listen to that, that meant a lot to you. And so it's, you know, it's the experiences that we go through, but it's also the experiences that we learn by watching others and listening to others as well. One thing I wanted to ask you about, because it's interesting where we get our questions, just so everyone knows out there, we usually take a poll or we will talk with different staff members, or they'll get different people that will all want to know. So these are not all my questions. I wish I could say that they were, but a couple of people, these are just a few things. I think you may have mentioned that, but who is the most influential person in your life?
I guess I'll answer you this way. I've been very blessed in that the people that I have worked for, I've learned something incredibly valuable from almost each and every one of them. I think one thing that I was very proud of is that when I got married 15 years ago, and I was standing there, behind me were several of the men that I had worked for, and we were friends still. So I could point to my very first commanding officer in the U.S. Marines when I was 22 years old. Incredible leader, very charismatic, very demanding, almost like an older brother. I mentioned Dave Fuente at Office Depot. I would have to mention Sean McGee, who was the president of Office Depot, someone who was very young, ran very hard, very fast, great teacher and mentor. I would have to mention Jay Martin and Paulo Teixeira at Juice Plus, the founder and CEO of Juice Plus Company. Learned a lot in my 10 years there about time-tested principles that, you know, with my time in private equity, sometimes are forgotten about. I mean, life is not a spreadsheet. Business is people. And, you know, if you can understand that, you'll understand a lot. I mean, the number one reason people buy something, I don't think is because it's a great product or because it's a superior value proposition or some other phrase that I learned when I got my MBA. The number one reason people buy something is because they were asked. And you have, when you're hanging up your spurs at the end of your career, and I tell this to my father now, who's close to 80, had a very successful career in the electronics industry. I'm like, Dad, aren't you glad that you can travel anywhere in the world and pick up the phone and call somebody who is going to be really glad to see you in any city in the world almost? And, you know, if I can say something like that when I hang up my spurs, I'll say that I've been successful.
Great advice. Great advice. Well, this, your answers today, honestly, I know, they've even inspired me as well. And a lot of the things, just even for the younger audience that listens to our podcast, that these are things that they really want to know. So we really appreciate your time. But to end this interview, we never go out of this interview without asking everyone this main question. And that is, when you are, whether you're having a great day or a bad day, but you have a very important meeting or an exciting meeting to go to, and you've got to have game on and you're ready, you get in your car, what is the music and or song or the person that you listen to, or it may be a podcast or it may be silence, but what is it that you listen to when you're at that moment?
I guess, Angela, it depends on, am I going to a meeting where I need to love on somebody, in which case I play something very gentle and inspiring, or am I going into combat and I'll turn on some heavy rock music? So,
well, I'm going to choose combat because I know my audience would love that. So if you're going for that, who comes to mind? If you don't know the song, who's the artist?
You can't beat AC/DC for combat.
Love it! Awesome. No, that's perfect. Wonderful. Well, listen, thank you so much for
thank
your time
you,
today.
Pleasure.
I know that, thank you. I know a lot of executives, middle level, senior level, entry level, it takes your time to do this, but I can guarantee you by your words today, you have inspired someone, you've given them direction, and you've made the day. So thank you for that.
It's my pleasure. Thanks again.
This podcast is sponsored by A. Stevens & Associates, an executive search firm that places C-suite executives in the pharmaceutical, biotech, consumer, food, and nutrition industries. You can find more at astevensandassociates.com.